Now, beginning in the fifth chapter, we have a picture, generally in this chapter given, of the vengeance that will be brought by the Babylonian captivity. And this vengeance is really portrayed more after the seventh verse, because in the first seven verses, we have the story of the tender care of God that He gave for His people, and yet the unworthiness that they gave back to God. He begins by saying, "Now will I sing to my well-beloved a song of my beloved touching his vineyard." I'm going to sing a song now to my well-beloved of my beloved touching his vineyard. "My well-beloved hath a vineyard in a very fruitful hill." Now, to use the story of a vineyard to portray a lesson was something that would be very well understood by these people, because they lived by vineyards. They knew the problems associated with vineyards. They were very common. Everybody knew a story that would come from the allusion to a vineyard. So he said, "My well-beloved hath a vineyard in a very fruitful hill." Now, a fruitful hill would be a place that was productive, not a place where you wouldn't expect to get any produce, but a productive area. So it was in a very fruitful hill, and notice what he did now to this vineyard. "And he fenced it, and gathered out the stones thereof." Of course, we think of a person that goes all the trouble to put a fence around a piece of land, that they're really going to give some care to that land. You don't just put up a fence for nothing, because a fence is very time-consuming and expensive and takes a lot of effort. And they gathered out the stones thereof, and this county here, Hamilton County, we see areas where they have gathered a lot of stones out and built up a wall with a stone, or built up a corner brace with stones, because this is the way that the land is made more productive, to get those stones out of the way. "And planted it with the choicest vine." We want to come back to that in just a moment. "And built a tower in the midst of it." Now, this tower is probably not just a little old shack to be used only temporarily, but it was probably the farm of the place, where they used it to store their utensils, and it was a permanent fixture to go with the vineyard. They built a tower in the midst of it, and also made a wine press therein. Now, a wine press was a place that they dug out many times in the earth or even in the rock to gather the juice from the grape. And it had to be sometimes in a protected place to protect it from the heat and the wind and the storms of that part of the country. "And he looked that it should bring forth grapes, and it brought forth wild grapes." So this man looked that it should bring forth grapes. He was expecting grapes. And what did he get? He got wild grapes. Well, let's go back just for a moment now and look at this phrase where he says he planted it with the choicest vine. This phrase, choicest vine, comes from the word sorek, S-O-R-E-K. And sorek is not only a type of vine, but it is also a place that's located between Ascalon and Gaza in the southern part of Israel. And it was a very fruitful place to grow vineyards. In Numbers 13, beginning with the 21st verse, and I want to turn and read that here in just a moment, we have the story of the spies who went out and investigated that very part of the land. And beginning in the last of the 20th verse of Numbers 13, "Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. So they went up and searched the land from the wilderness of Zin unto Rehob, as men came to Hamath. And they ascended by the south, and came up to Hebron, where Ahiman, Shishai, and Talmai, the children of Anak, were." Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. "And they came unto the brook of Eshcol, and cut down from thence a branch with one cluster of grapes, and they bare it between two upon a staff, and they brought the pomegranates and of the figs. The place is called the brook of Eshcol because of the cluster of grapes which the children of Israel cut down from thence, and they returned from searching of the land after 40 days. So the point I want to make here is that they cut this branch with one cluster of grapes, and it seemed to be so massive that they had to bear it, two of them, on a staff. Now, whether it was just a bunch of grapes or the branch that was so large, it's hard to tell, but it indicates that this was a very fruitful area, a very fruitful place with which to have a vineyard. And so when he says, I planted my vineyard with the choicest of vine, it's this word Sorek, which is that area where they got that very fruitful supply of grapes from one cluster. Now, after God had gone to all of this trouble, done all of these things that he could, he looked that it should bring forth grapes. Naturally, it would be only reasonable to expect that they were going to get some grapes now as a result of all this work and effort. And it brought forth wild grapes. It didn't bring forth what he wanted. And this word, wild grapes here, really means poisonous berries. It didn't bring forth the kind of thing he was expecting to bring. It brought forth poisonous berries. Not just an inferior grape, not just a grape that you could eat and not get quite as much good out of, although it wouldn't do you any harm, but it would be one that would do you harm to partake of it. It was poisonous. And of course, we find that this is true in all of the illustrations of God's fruitfulness, rather of the fruitfulness of God's people. You either bring forth good fruit or you bring forth bad fruit. There's no such thing as bringing forth a little dried up good fruit that's not going to hurt anybody and you can kind of get by on. You either bring forth good fruit that is beneficial or you bring forth the kind of fruit that's going to be detrimental. Be like the wild berries or the poisonous berries. So after getting this very undesirable results, he asked the question in verse 3, and now, O inhabitants of Jerusalem and men of Judah, judge, I pray you, betwixt me and my vineyard. Make a judgment here now as to what's going to happen between me and my vineyard. What could have been done more to my vineyard that I have not done in it? What could I have done more? Well, look what I did. I got a very fruitful hill. I fenced it. I gathered out the stones, I planted it with the choicest vine, I built a tower in the middle of it and a wine press, and I expected to get some good grapes. What more could I have done? I did all of my part. I did everything that was necessary for me to do. So if there's a discrepancy, it's because the vineyard didn't put forth what it should have done. Well, as we look further and make an application of this to ourselves today, we see that God can ask the same question today. What more could he do? He's made a plan of salvation for us. He's given us a plan whereby we can be washed pure and made holy, whereby we can have complete forgiveness, remission of our sins, and he'll hold them against us no more forever, whereby we can acceptably serve and worship him. He's given us a perfect church. He's given us a perfect word, and it's only up to us to do it, and it can be done. So God can ask the question, if we come short, what more do you want me to do? What more could I have done? And so he says, wherefore, when I looked that it should bring forth grapes, brought it forth wild grapes. Why? When I expected good grapes, why did I get the wild grapes or the poisonous berries? Why? And now go to, I will tell you what I'll do to my vineyard. I'll take away the hedge thereof, and it shall be eaten up, and break down the wall thereof, and it shall be trodden down, and I will lay it waste. It shall not be pruned nor digged, but there shall come up briars and thorns, and I will also command the clouds that they rain no rain upon it. Now he's just going to completely destroy this vineyard, and that of course is what was going to happen very shortly to Israel. Israel was going to be taken away into captivity, and it'd be no more Israel in the land of Israel or Jews in the land of Judea. I will take away the hedge thereof, and it shall be eaten up. That is, I'm going to remove the protection. I'm going to break down the wall thereof, and it's going to be trodden down. I'll lay it waste. It'll not be pruned or digged. Now, there's not going to be any work done on this vineyard at all. It's going to be allowed to be trodden down and eaten up, and there will just come up briars and thorns, and I'll even command the clouds that there rain no rain upon it. You're not even going to have the benefit of rain like the other land round about you because of the fact that you have brought forth the wrong kind of fruit. For the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel, and the men of Judah his pleasant plant. Now that's that choicest vine that we read of in the second verse. Here he calls it his pleasant plant. And he looketh for judgment, but behold oppression, for righteousness, but behold a cry. As he looks for judgment, what does he get but tyranny or oppression? As he looks for righteousness, all he gets is a cry, which would indicate the fact that they were not doing the kind of works or justice that they should have been doing. Now, at this point, I'd like to refer to a very interesting thing here. In Matthew 21, Jesus gives a parable that seems to be based upon this prophecy in Isaiah. And his parable follows this and with some very striking similarities. In Matthew 21, beginning with verse 33. Hear another parable. There was a certain householder which planted a vineyard and hedged it round about and digged a winepress in it and built a tower and let it out to husbandmen and went into a far country. So you see, he made some very similar preparations to what Isaiah describes. The hedge and the wine press and the tower that was built. Now this parable that Jesus is giving is referring to the Jews of his day. They were still in the vineyard at that time, and they'd been allowed to return, and they were occupying the vineyard, and so he's going to show what God was going to say about the same vineyard at his time. And when the time of the fruit drew near, he sent his servants to the husbandmen, that they might receive the fruits of it. And the husbandmen took his servants and beat one, and killed another, and stoned another. Again, he sent other servants, more than the first, and they did unto them likewise. But last of all, he sent unto them his son, saying, they will reverence my son. But when the husbandmen saw the son, they said among themselves, this is the heir. Come, let us kill him, and let us seize on his inheritance. And they caught him, and cast him out of the vineyard, and slew him. When the Lord therefore of the vineyard cometh, what will he do unto those husbandmen? And Jesus asked the question, just as Isaiah asked the question, whenever Isaiah says, and now, O inhabitants of Jerusalem and men of Judah, judge, I pray you, between me and my vineyard. What more could I have done to my vineyard? Jesus said, what shall they do to those husbandmen? They say unto him, he will miserably destroy those wicked men, and will let out his vineyard unto other husbandmen, which shall render him the fruits in their seasons. And he said unto them, did you never read in the scripture, the stone which the builders rejected, the same has become the head of the corner? This is the Lord's doing, and it's a marvelous in our sight. Therefore, say I unto you, the kingdom of God shall be taken from you, and given to a nation, bringing forth the fruits thereof. And whosoever shall fall on this stone shall be broken, but on whomsoever it shall fall, it will grind him to powder. And when the chief priests and Pharisees had heard his parables, they perceived that he spake of them. But when they sought to lay hands on him, they feared the multitude, because they took him for a prophet. So I thought it quite interesting to read that parable given by Jesus, which is very similar to the parable given, or to the story given in Isaiah. And as Isaiah was talking of the vineyard and the inhabitants of it before the captivity, Jesus was talking of the vineyard and the inhabitants of it after they had returned from the captivity and whenever they were rejecting the Messiah who had come for the ultimate salvation. Now, beginning in the 8th verse of Isaiah 5, we have a series of woes given, which are depicting the vengeance that will be brought by the Babylonian captivity. So he begins by saying in verse 8, woe unto them that join house to house, and that lay field to field, till there be no place, that they may be placed alone in the midst of the earth. Now this seems to be teaching that these people who had come in and inhabited Canaan, they had thrived and they had multiplied so that they were laying piece after piece of land together, and they had just taken up all the land. They were building big cities so that they had houses joined to house and house to house, and it just seemed to be that there was no place for anybody else. And he shows in verse 9, in mine ears, saith the Lord of hosts, of a truth many houses shall be desolate, even great and fair without inhabitant. Going to be a lot of houses desolate, he says. They're going to be great and fair houses that are not going to have any inhabitants in them. Showing that this country was going to be no longer inhabited by them. They would not be allowed the privileges of enjoying the benefits of this country. Yea, 10 acres of vineyard shall yield one bath, and the seed of an omer shall yield an epah. Now, 10 acres, I understand it, would be the amount of ground that it would take 10 yoke of oxen to plow for one day. Well, these 10 acres shall yield one bath. Now, one bath is only less than 8 gallons. And so we have here across our driveway an orchard that is also 10 acres. And it yields bushel after bushel after bushel of peaches, and there have been grapevines there that have yielded abundant grapes, and you expect a lot more than that out of 10 acres. And he said that would yield less than 8 gallons. And the seed of an omer shall yield an epah. Now, an epah is only 1/10 of an omer, so you could plant an omer and you'd only get 1/10 of your seed back. Be like planting 10 ears of corn and only getting 1 ear back in return. All of the work where you've been better off not to have planted any, because you're going to lose out, not even get 1/10 of your seed back. But he says that's what's going to happen as a result of your covetousness. Then in verse 11, woe unto them that rise up early in the morning, that they may follow strong drink. Now, as I understand, the strong drink here is the drink that's made from the date palms, and those were very abundant in that country, and it's not wine as it comes from grape juice, but it is another form of intoxicating beverage, and it was highly inebriating. And that continue until night till wine inflame them. Now this word wine here is yayin, which is the fermented grape juice. So he's condemning the use of wine in this way. And in Amos 6, verses 3 through 6, Amos seems to be even stronger than, or more graphic than Isaiah in his portrayal of this. Let me read what Amos says here.